My guest at this time is Grace Marie Turner, president of the Galen Institute, which is one of the leading healthcare policy organizations in the country. As open enrollment proceeds in the Obamacare exchanges, the Obama administration is hailing the new law as an unqualified success. While more Americans do have some sort of coverage, premiums are rising in many parts of the country, and approximately half of state co-ops have imploded, as was recently reported in the Wall Street Journal. Today, we turn our attention to another growing concern, the mass exodus of competent physicians. And Grace Marie, thanks very much for being with us.
Greg, it's always a pleasure to be with you.
How big is the problem? How many doctors are leaving medicine rather than operating under the new law?
Well, two things are happening. Some of the more seasoned, experienced, established physicians are just taking down their shingle and saying, we've had it, we cannot deal with this cookbook medicine, we cannot fight the rules and regulations and legal jeopardy we're in. And so they're leaving practice early. We're losing decades of experience and medical expertise when doctors would otherwise be at the prime of their practice, leaving because they cannot deal with the bureaucracy or afford it. But then a number of physicians who are younger and still have bills to pay and families to support are selling their practices to hospitals, which mean that they basically become employees and have to do what the hospitals say. The Physicians Foundation did a survey recently of about 20,000 physicians and found that in 2008, before Obamacare passed, 60% of physicians considered themselves to be independent. Now only a third do. So the takeover of medicine by government bureaucracies or government bureaucratic agents has already started and is well underway, Greg.
Grace Marie, you mentioned the blizzard of bureaucratic paperwork that physicians and their offices need to do now. What's changed? What is most burdensome to them now as a result of this law?
The reason is that the doctors cannot navigate this incredible bureaucracy. They may see 40 patients during a day, and then they have mountains of paperwork to fill out. And if they slip up and say something just in carelessness or not understanding the rules and make a mistake, they could be subject to tens of thousands of dollars in fines. They just cannot expose themselves to that kind of jeopardy. And so they really are buying the protection of these big hospital chains, which can hire the armies of doctors and bureaucrats to try to help them navigate the bureaucracy. But the bureaucratization of American medicine is well underway, and that does not bode well for patients. These experienced doctors are the ones that are most likely to leave their practices are the ones who can use their judgment to not only practice the science of medicine, but the art of medicine, so that they can say, what does this patient need? What do my decades of experience and education tell me about how I can particularly help this patient to get the best care? Now they have to follow these very strict rules and regulations of these big hospital systems in order to treat a patient. And if they don't, they may either not be paid, but they also could be penalized. So we're losing the creativity, the art of medicine that is really what helps progress, helps it to progress and to be able to figure out how can we give this patient the best care.
Grace Marie, what is the overall impact on care then, whether it's the bureaucracy of those who are now operating under the hospital system or those who are just throwing up their hands and saying, I've got enough money, I can retire, and I'm not going to go through this massive headache for the rest of my career? Right. How does that affect patients?
Well, what this means is both the doctors who stay in practice and even more, the medical students who apply and are accepted are people who want to work 40-hour week, and they're perfectly happy to follow this cookbook medicine standardization and to not rock the boat by trying to do something innovative that might actually teach us something. And some of the greatest innovations in medicine have come from doctors saying, I don't believe this is right. For example, we used to think that ulcers were caused by physiological by stress and by other things. And we learned because of one doctor's courage that it actually was a big bacteria. How many people do you hear about having ulcers anymore? They don't, because one doctor figured out that it was a bacteria that was causing the ulcers, not stress and improper diet as we thought for decades. And so as a result, we were able to progress and really keep people from having to have these ulcers and ulcer surgery, because we learned what the real source was. That was one physician that figured this out for himself. And when we learn that those kinds of things are much less likely to happen, then we're going to lose doctors' ability to really be creative and to be scientists in trying to say, what can we learn about this? How can we treat this patient better?
Grace Marie, let's talk about a couple of potential impacts here. Number one, with the fewer physicians in the game, that obviously, and more patients being added as a result of this as well, that would suggest there's the possibility of longer waiting lists. Are we seeing that at this point?
Well, it's certainly what you see in every other country that moves toward a government-centric healthcare system. That healthcare, you know, everybody can't have all the healthcare they want at all times, just like we can't have all the housing or the cars or the food. There is a sense of rationing. The market is the best rationer in the sense that we make decisions about what we can afford, balancing out other needs. But when the government is in charge of making decisions about healthcare, then rationing often happens by queuing, by telling people you just have to wait longer for your treatment. There's actually a think tank in Canada called the Fraser Institute that has for years been chronicling the wait times. If you get a diagnosis of cancer, how long is it going to be in Canada before you're able to get your first treatment? Sometimes it's 16 weeks, sometimes it's longer. That can be a death sentence. But they actually intentionally delay treatment in order to be able to provide everybody the same care, but the same care winds up being a much lower common denominator than we have in this country. I do worry that we are going to move toward a system in which we begin to ration care in a lot of different ways. And in the United Kingdom, for example, doctors actually ration care by giving patients that are on the national health system, the single payer system, cheaper cancer drugs, for example, rather than the newer, more expensive drugs that patients who have private insurance, supplementary private insurance, have access to. So there are lots of different ways that these systems force doctors to ration care in very subtle ways that oftentimes may not even be visible to patients.
Grace Marie, another potential concern that I've certainly heard from others in the medical profession is that the exodus of doctors could lead to lower standards, either domestically or what foreign doctors are allowed to practice medicine in our country. What's your assessment on that front?
Well, you know, when you drive out the established physicians who are basically saying they just are not willing to practice under these kinds of conditions, you still have to have physicians, and we do have many foreign medical graduates in this country, and patients complain that they have a physician who, you know, they really can't communicate with, and that they may be appropriate for some populations in this, you know, very diverse country we have, but if you're in a network of physicians in California, for example, you may wind up with a very, very narrow network and only one or two physicians in a particular specialty area that you that treat the particular concern, medical issue that you have, and you wind up having somebody that you may not even be able to adequately communicate with. So that's really one of the manifestations of these narrow networks and having too few physicians. But I will tell you, Greg, I actually have spent the last 3 or 4 days a great deal of time at GW Hospital in Washington, D.C., which is the hospital that treated President Reagan after he was shot in 1981, because a friend of mine had emergency cardiac surgery. She had a pacemaker installed. The care was wonderful. When you look at the nurses and the doctors that are still taking care of patients, it is so inspiring to see how much they continue to want to practice good medicine. And they are devoted to their patients. But they are so stressed in many cases and so frustrated by saying, I got into this business to take care of patients, not to fill out bureaucracy, all this paperwork and bureaucracy. It's so overwhelming to them that they basically are looking at their computers the whole time and not the patient. And it's not their fault. It's the system that's requiring them to do that.
Exit question. How, if at all, do we fix it?
We fix it by moving back toward a system in which doctors and patients are making decisions about health care. And how you do that is by letting people make the kinds of decisions about the kind of health coverage that they want to protect themselves from medical bills. For some people, it may be a health maintenance organization, one place you go for all of your care. For others, they may say, I want a high deductible plan to protect me in case something major happens, but I want to pay out of pocket for my bills, my routine medical bills. There are things like direct medical practice physicians who basically you pay $30, $40 to go see the doctor. Insurance is not even involved. There's so many creative ways that the insurance industry and the health sector could come up with protecting patients financially and giving them greater access to care if we were to loosen up the system and get rid of this bureaucratization of the health sector that Obamacare has not led but really perpetuated. There was something called the red tape tower that Senator McConnell used to have drag around with him. That's this 10-foot tower of regulations that have been written just since Obamacare was passed into law. If they were also to include all of the rules and regulations for Medicare and Medicaid, you would need a semi-tractor trailer. That is really what's going to kill the spirit of medicine. We've got to move back toward a system in which doctors and patients are in charge of decisions. And in order to do that, you need some protections, but mostly you need patients to be making decisions about the kind of coverage and protection they want to protect their family and the chance that they might get sick and need major medical service. We're not going to fix this with more bureaucracy.
Grace Marie, we greatly appreciate your time and your insight.
Thank you so much, Greg.
Grace Marie Turner is president of the Galen Institute, one of the leading healthcare policy firms in the nation. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.